Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 350 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined by Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
With this episode, I'm going to put the old numbering underneath this as well.
No, we got to go back to a new number one after next week. And then when we get close to 400,
right,
we have to go back. Oh, yeah, that's marvel it, as they say, as the kids say.
But yeah, 350 episodes of this, 130 some of After Dark. That's a lot of podcasting.
That is, and it sounds like the way you're yawning, we did them all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
You gonna make it, big guy?
Yep, I'm gonna make it. I am sitting in a way that I'm propping my giant lunk head up in the hopes that it does not fall over.
Oh, you have head support?
Mm-hmm.
That's good to good to know.
I don't know for how
so
long.
So I'll get right... What?
I said, I don't know how for how long.
All right, so I'll get right into it so you we don't lose you halfway through the show.
Right.
On this in news today, we have variant covers from the future. Marvel now isn't just adding an issue to major events. They're adding whole events to the end of their events.
Oh, boy.
And in sad news, we lose a legend in comic book TV-dom, Adam West. Also, we'll have con news, free digital books and sales, what we read last week, which is Doctor Strange 20, the final issue of Jason Aaron and Chris Piccolo's run. Also, Batman 24, where there was big news out of that. And also, we have a preview review, as long as Joe gets this up after midnight. We don't break any embargoes.
Oh, boy.
We also have what we're looking forward to this week, and Todd and Joe have issues. This week is Alias number 10, and there's no TV or movies or anything at the end, so this may be a condensed show for tree fitting.
Things are quiet for the next couple of weeks on both TV and movies. Spider-Man doesn't come out for, like, what, another 3 weeks?
Right.
And, you know, next week, if you want, we could probably do a review of Captain Underpants, because I think we're going to see that this weekend.
If you want to do a Captain Underpants review, I'm down with that.
Okay.
I don't see me going to see Captain Underpants, but you never know. It could happen.
I think I did, when we went to go see Pirates 5 a couple weeks ago, I did my short review on it.
Right, and I even forget what your short review was.
It was fine. The movie itself was under 2 hours. The special effects were okay. Johnny Depp has still got it.
You know what? I kind of want to see it now since you gave it a glowing review.
C-.
Oh. All right. Interesting. Maybe I'll wait. I'll wait till it comes on TVs.
There you go. So let's get into the news.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned starting with the Image covers. Next month's variant, and Image has been doing this a lot lately where they just kind of, like, unsuspectingly throw these weird variant covers in there. They're not in previews when they originally come out.
Mm-hmm.
They just decide, like, yeah, we're going to do, like, crazy mixed-up covers where we're going to have an homage to the first issue of Wildcats as the cover for Walking Dead this month.
Yep, or we're going to do April Fool's covers.
Right. I think the April Fool's covers we had a little bit more lead time on for some reason, but these ones not so much because these are already the July books.
Right.
And it's going to 18 books in July are going to have a theme of what's going on in that book 25 years in the future.
Oh my goodness.
Some of them I don't get because I don't read a lot of the books.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are the funniest to me are specifically Regression, which they show us the cover, and Crosswind, which we talked about last week. The first issue of that isn't out yet, and the second issue is going to have a variant that shows you what happens 25 years in the future.
But I think they might be joking around, Joe.
I think they might be ribbing on some of them as well. But I'm sure there are certain books, because if you remember, did you read Chew?
No.
Chew did a similar gimmick where not so much as here's a cover that happens 25 years in the future, here's an issue that happens like 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like part three of a 5-part crossover. And, you know, obviously when it got to that point, it all made sense. Because John Layman had that book so well laid out that he could do something like that as a rib.
Right.
Of course, in my copies, I couldn't read it until those issues came out.
What? So now does it fit? It fits. Now, okay. In Joe Sposto's collection, where does that issue go?
In the numerical order in which it's supposed to be read.
Right, but you don't. But you'll only read it where it goes in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
Okay, I'm just checking.
That's the way it's supposed to be done.
I was wondering if you... if you put it in your Chew collection, mm-hmm. where it's supposed to go, so it's just easier to read when you sit down and reread your Chew collection, as you often do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the days when I used to be able to sit down and reread things in their entirety, just for kicks.
I remember when we were doing an old episode, I don't know where it was at, and it was when we had the questions of your favorite blank, and you asked the question, what's your favorite Garth Ennis, you know, run? And I remember coming on, and the next week we did it, I was like, yeah, so I read, I didn't know if it was going to be Hitman Hellblazer run or Preacher. So I sat down and I read them all, and the gasp you gave, like, that I had the time to sit down and read 60-some issues of Preacher, how many issues of Hitman, and how many run of Hellblazer. Yeah, I did that all in a week, and you were both aghast and jealous all in the same breath.
I was shocked.
You were, and it's one of my proudest moments on this or any other show.
Because I've done that, but not to that extent. Like, that probably was close to 200 issues.
Right.
If not over 200 issues, where I've gone through and I'm like, yeah, you know, when I'll end up, like, in that week's time, I'll end up reading, like, 3 trades of something. Or, you know, 20 or 30 books of something.
Mm-hmm.
That time just doesn't exist anymore, man.
You know what? I think I got all the time that you lost.
I think so.
Because I could just read... I mean, I did the Hexecution thing, so... I seem to have way too much time on my hands.
Right, but Hexecution was more of a research project.
Right, but I still read over 200 issues.
Right, but that was over a period of time. That wasn't, like, all in one sitting or even, like, in one week.
Right.
And you didn't really have to read the issues. All you had to do was kind of sort of thumb through them all.
Nope.
No?
I read them.
Right.
Come on, you don't sit down and just thumb through Jonah Hex. You read those. Rube.
That's me, a Rube.
So
anywho, moving along with some other news on the Marvel side of things. So we're all aware we're in the midst of Secret Empire, and I had actually just noticed this the other day when we got the Marvel previews for whatever book it is, for whatever month coming out. I guess this would be like August books or something.
Yeah, June for August, yes.
Right. So, they're at least breezing through soliciting issues of Secret Empire, because the previous month issue of Marvel previews was soliciting issues 4 and 5,
mm-hmm.
and this one was soliciting issues 9 and 10. And I'm like, I don't know where the other issues gone to. I don't know where they popped up, but that's what was on the cover.
They're out. They're going to be out.
Yeah. Because
it's not, this one's not going to be late because they have multiple artists.
Right. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple things that I noticed. One, of course, was that all of a sudden on issue 10 of this, the logo on the cover changes to something classified.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Steve Rogers is going to turn Hydra into a gray blob.
You never know.
Right. And then another thing is you can order a variant of that issue, which leads into, which is in the style of the Generations artwork that Alex Ross has been doing, and those Generation books come out that month as well, where it's like the classic version and the current version of some of your favorite heroes, your Spider-Man, your Hulks, your Hawkeyes, and so forth. Thor are going on a little adventure. Then there's that Generations number one that's being written by Jason Aaron. So the thing that's mentioned on there is the vanishing point. They're saying, what is the vanishing point? Now, obviously, this is where the speculation part of the thing comes in, is because we were informed that after Secret Empire that they were going to be taking a break from events, which doesn't seem like the lie that Marvel would typically tell, but here we are. And, you know, Generations just seemed less of an event and more of just like a little thing to do with some of these characters. And now, all of a sudden, somehow, I guess, Secret Empire is going to tie into that? I don't know.
See, I think a lot of people are grasping at straws here.
Right, just that's why I'm glad we're bringing this up. Talk me off
the ledge?
Yeah.
I just think it's a variant cover in the vein of Generations, and it's something that they're just throwing out there as in, you know, like a lot of weird things. I think Generations will spin out of Secret Empire? Yes, but do I think it's one of those things that's going to be, you know, like you have to read Secret Empire? They've been doing this for years, and I mean, I'm trying to think. Siege went into what was the one with the Dark Avengers, and so it always lays the seeds down for the next thing. So maybe we'll get a tease of something at the end, but I don't think it's like everybody's making it out to be. Oh, like this jumps right into to Generations. It could either be just a tease to me or just a throwaway variant cover. They have some extra Alex Ross art laying around. That ain't cheap. Slap it on something.
All right. Now, see, you're the voice of reason with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't going to make me want to go and read the Secret Empire.
Right.
But with books like Secret Empire, like Thor we have coming up, like Spider-Man 2, the miniseries that Bendis is doing with Miles Morales and Peter Parker Spider-Man, it seems as though they're doing a lot more blurring of the old Ultimate Universe back into the main Marvel Universe. And in Infamous Iron Man as well, with Ultimate Reed there.
Right.
There seems to be a lot more of the Ultimate Universe becoming a bigger part in the main Marvel Universe.
Right.
And I think that month is also what would be through the all the different name changes and miniseries is, and completely revamps of what the book is. They're doing a renumbering back to issue 200 of Ultimates.
Right.
Just like they did in issue 150 of Venom to get it back to what would have been its original numbering if they took every book that was just called Venom and put them out as though they were published all together.
Right, marveling the numbers, got it.
Right, so, I don't know, it seems as though maybe this is them trying to bring the Ultimate Universe back as a separate thing.
I don't know about that. I think they're going to leave it the way that is, because they love their multiple characters. Because, you know, with the war Thor coming,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that, like you said, there's all this stuff. I think they're gonna weave it in, and it's gonna stay that way. I don't think we're getting an Ultimate Universe books back, like a whole separate thing.
But see, Marvel isn't really the company that does multiple versions of a character until recently. That was more DC's thing.
Yeah, you mean like Thunderstrike and Thor and Fantastic Force and Fantastic Four
and
all the other.
Right, and how well did those work out? They're fondly remembered today, right?
Yes, but that's not the phrase that you said. They said, you know, Marvel's doesn't, that's DC's thing.
It is.
Marvel's been doing it too, and they're doing it right now. You have Thor Odinson, even though he doesn't have a hammer. You have two Spider-Mans running around. If you can make money off of one, we have two Captain Americas.
Right.
That's Marvel's thing
right now.
One's
a dirty Nazi.
What?
One's a dirty Nazi.
A Hydra agent. Get it right.
All right.
But you know what I'm saying? So if one of something is good, two is even better, and possibly three.
And that's what I'm afraid of, that we're going to get three. Or four, or five. You know, it's going to just cause mass and brand confusion. They need to streamline these things, as we've kind of discussed with our local shop, of course, that they need to kind of get back to, at least on some of the bigger books, the versions of the characters that a majority of the populace recognize. So when they come into the store, they see the character they recognize on the cover of their Iron Man or their Captain America book, like whatever the movie properties are.
Right, or at least not all of them at once.
Right.
You want to shake things up, I got no problem with that. But I know we've talked about this at the store too, like you said. It's literally none of the Avengers are the people or the characters who were in Avengers 1 through 5. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Well, Cap, like you said, he's Hydra Cap, but like Hulk is Choi, it's Thor is Jane Foster. It's just, they're all, and we've always said it's just tough to do that all at once. So they do have to get back to basics. And I think that is going to happen a little bit with they see, and they say they don't want to copy Rebirth, but they're going to. That's the way this industry works.
As much as I'm lamenting about this, as long as at the end of the day they have good writers on the books, that's all that matters to me.
Me too. And as long as we get an FF book like the rumors say, that's all I care about.
Right. Maybe that's the vanishing point.
Maybe that's where Reed and Sue are.
Right. So the last bit of news is some sad news that I saw this Saturday, of course, as many people did. The passing of Adam West at the age of 88. And for many people, he is Batman, or was at the very least their introduction to comic book characters. Because there was a period of time where that show ran all the time on TV.
That's right. When there was only a couple of stations, Batman was usually on somewhere. I'm with you. He's the guy, that if it's that and maybe the old Super Friends cartoons were my introduction to comic books, cause that was what was on at the time. And Batman, Adam West was Batman for me for a while. And I went through, I think we even discussed on the show, I went through my stages of 66 Batman. That everybody, I think, goes through. When you're a kid, you love it. And then you get older into your teenage years and you're young, young man, and you're like, no, I want Alan Moore and grim and gritty, and Adam West Batman is destroying comic books. And then you slowly come back around to this is hysterical. And it's great. I'm glad that they managed to get the rights so they can put the things back, put them back out and the merchandise. And they even managed to do the cartoon where they brought back Adam West and Burt Ward to do the voices one more time, which I never got to see.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to check that out, because I've never seen it. But, Adam West Batman, it was always fantastic. I'm saddened to, for the loss.
Right, and I'm kind of the same mindset as you. There was a period of time where I fell out of love with those shows, and I would say probably in the last 5 to 6 years, the old Batman TV show has really grown on me, and I would probably put it up as, if not number two, at least number three favorite iterations of Batman in non-comics medium.
Right.
And it's all Adam West. And it was toward, the 90s and into, more current time where Adam West was kind of willing to kind of poke some fun at himself with his few appearances on The Simpsons. And, of course, he was the mayor on Family Guy, where he just completely made a mockery of himself on that show.
Right. I was listening to the sports radio the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that, remember that show that I was telling you about? Super Dave Osborne was on.
Yeah, yeah.
Norm Macdonald. And they just goof, it's a goofing around show. He was on like 2 months ago on the Dan Le Batard show, and they replayed it yesterday or Monday because, you know, he of his passing over the weekend. And it was the last interview that they had done with him. And it was really interesting. If I can find it, I think you would like it, because it started out they were going to bring him on, and I can't think of the guy. He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm, very like a hefty gentleman. And he was also, he's also on that, like that Jeff Garlin.
Yeah.
He was on, and Garlin had done an impression of Adam West, and it's a terrible impression, but he does the whole cadence kind of a thing. And so they brought Adam West on to do an impression off between Jeff Garlin and Adam West. And before they can get Jeff on, they were waiting for him from the thing. Adam West was talking about his career and how he was offered the James Bond role at one point, and he turned it down for two reasons. One, he was under contract, and two, he thought, well, this should go to a British guy, not some guy from wherever he said he was from. I think he said Spokane, but just it was cool. And he was talking about how at one point he just gave up and he embraced the whole Batman thing, because he was like, people love it, I shouldn't hate it anymore. It was a really interesting interview, and the, you know, the behind the thing, scenes thing. And I just seeing him in other stuff and him on that show, I've heard him before and doing interviews. He had a great sense of humor. Seems like a fun guy. You know what I mean? Like, he got it after a while, but you can understand how you could be a little angry for a while after, you know, that typecast him. That pretty much, you know, hamstrung his career for a while.
Right. Now, one thing I do want to mention is, if you've never seen it, you, Todd, or you, the listener, he did a pilot for a TV show in the early 90s called Look Well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with this?
I remember it, but I don't remember it, if that makes any sense.
Okay. If you haven't seen it in some time, I highly recommend you go check it out. I first saw it was, remember the cable channel Trio?
Yes.
Where they would just show, like, old failed pilots or shows that were only, like, six episodes or whatever it was?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I first saw it, and the gist of the show is Adam West in the show plays this guy, Lookwell, who was a TV detective, and he's no longer getting acting roles, so he decides to use his skills from being a TV detective to become a real detective.
That would be a great show.
Right, and it was written by Conan O'Brien and Bob Smigel, so, you know, they're funny people. And I remember the show just being, like, so just crazy and ridiculous, and it was way ahead of its time, and they only made one episode of it.
Now, what time, what round time was this again, you said?
91?
So this was like, you know, like Get a Life and stuff, like stuff that was way ahead of its time, like said.
Yeah.
And now, like, now this kind of stuff would have been, like, you know, groundbreaking back then. My favorite thing with Adam West is, as much as I love the Batman 66 and stuff like that, it's still Batman, but those Legends of the Superhero specials.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I want to rewatch those. That's something we should do when we have nothing to watch at the end of these shows, these episodes.
Right.
Is I might be rewatching that soon regardless, because they're a blast.
Not a terrible idea, my good man.
Legends of the Superheroes.
There was Legends and Roast.
The Roast is even better, because the Roast is Ed McMahon and the whole swamp gimmick with Solomon Grundy, who was Lurch from the Addams Family.
Right.
Oh, God. I need to watch that again.
Good times.
Mm-hmm. No, that was J.J. Walker.
He wasn't on there as, like, wasn't there
Ghetto Man was
Ghetto
on
Man.
There. Ghetto Man. And do you remember what his magic word was?
No.
Kareem!
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Not Kareem-y. Kareem.
Well, one of those is a real word. The other one's not.
That's right.
So, moving along, there's conventions this weekend, and there's actually a ton of conventions, actually. Smaller conventions, the Water Gap Comic Festival in Mount Bethel, PA. I just wanted to mention that because I pass the Water Gap exit all the time going to New Jersey.
Yes.
The St. Louis Comic Con in St. Louis proper. And that's where you get your more comic type folks. Your Chris Claremont and James O'Barr is going to be there.
The Crow.
Right. Wizard World is heading out to Sacramento, where their guest of honor there is Val Kilmer, of all people.
Mm, Batman. The second best Batman after Adam West.
Now, I was looking at their list and wondering where all the World Wrestling Entertainers are. They're at Awesome Con in Washington, D.C., which is a pretty big con, but again, still down on the list of things here, because we always save the big one for last, right?
Right, right.
So Awesome Con has Nakamura, Charlotte.
Cartwheel!
Right. Also, Stan Lee is going to be there.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a different Stan. But
no, Will Wheaton is going to be there.
Mm.
Edgar Wright, who I don't think makes many convention appearances.
I was going to say no. I don't can get him to sign your Ant-Man DVD.
Oh, man. Write something nice. And some guy, David Tennant.
Is that how you pronounce it? The Purple Man.
Oh, the Purple Man. Now, see, if they advertised that's who it was, I would know who they were talking about.
That's right. Alias.
Mm-hmm. Also this weekend in Charlotte, not Charlotte the World Wrestling Entertainer, granddaughter of Ric Flair.
That's right.
Is Heroes Con.
That's a great
three bucket list cons that I still have to go to in my day.
Mm-hmm.
That C2E2, and let's say four. Emerald City I'd like to go to just to get it on the West Coast, and new New York Comic Con.
San Diego?
Nah, San Diego can...
That ship has sailed.
New York's ship has sailed as well, but it's close, you know?
Right. Now, I've been to, before we get into who's at North Carolina, I've been to North Carolina. It's one of the greatest cons I've ever been to.
Right.
Because that is like one, I don't know, maybe when you get to the guests now, that I always remember is mostly comic book guests, not a lot of media that I even know of.
Right.
And when I went to that one, I remember two things. Getting my Flash 110, which was the first appearance of Wally West. I think Dave got a Spider-Man 2, maybe, at that one. That was a big one. And eating grits for the first time with a group of comic people in a highfalutin restaurant that they gave us a special room to go to on Sunday so we could have it all to ourselves.
You and the comic book people to eat your grits?
Yes. Well, what happened was it was a buffet,
right.
And we went in, and Charlotte is closed down on the weekend. Like downtown Charlotte, it's like a business center. So we're at the con, nothing's open. We had to walk and walk till we found this restaurant. We walk in, it's like buffet today from, you know, breakfast buffet from blank to blank. And we go in, and we're like, hey, you know, and there's us, me and my shorts and, you know, black t-shirt, shockingly enough.
The
you know,
Todd
stuff
uniform.
Like that. Right, the uniform, the summer uniform. So we walk in, and then all of a sudden we look around as we're like, you know, for whatever, how many people, I forget it was like seven or so. And we look around, it's all people in suits. And
oh boy.
Yes, but we're like, give us a tip. So the manager comes over, and he's like, yes, you know what I think would be great for you? We have a back room where you can have it all to yourselves and nobody will bother you.
I'm surprised they didn't just put a partition around you.
That's right. Put a police tape around
us. Right.
But so we went and, you know, and it was great food. And we went and it was the first time I ever had grits and probably the last. And the best part about it was the waitresses that we had because they would come in and like bring us stuff, see how everything was going. And when we left, they were like, we just want to let you know, you are like the best customers we've ever had. All these like stuff shirts are the worst all the time. So it was like, you at least, you know, we're nice and, you know, we're polite. It's like, usually they're jerks. And we're like, yeah, we're the best. And we left.
It's that Southern hospitality that you guys have.
That's right. We brought it.
But yes, as Todd mentioned, Heroes Con is more or less primarily a comic book convention. Little to no media guests. These are the superstars to me, though. Your Eric Larsons, your Scotty Youngs, your Kelly Sue DeConnick's, your Steve Eptings, your Jason Aarons, your Tony Harris's. People like that.
Yes.
Those are the folks I usually go out of my way to see.
That's right. I would say it's a slightly bigger Baltimore Con.
Right, and that's part of the reason why I want to go.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, we do have to do C2E. We should do a Long Box Heroes trip to C2E2.
I had the offer from one of my guys in the Puzzle Quest Alliance that was just like, hey, if you want, I got a room. I ended up getting a suite. If you want to, you know, try to get as many of us to go and so on and so forth. And I was out that way anyway for Root Beer Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, if I didn't have a carload of guys, I might have swung by and just crashed. And, you know, swung by the 6 hours in the opposite direction to go to Chicago from Ohio.
That's right.
That's the sort of dumb I am.
Get your Mark photo with a wrestler.
Yeah. There were no wrestlers there.
What?
There was a mixed martial artist.
A failed UFC fighter.
Right. That's not a wrestler. But the big convention, Todd,
mm-hmm.
is Garden State Megafest in Monroe, New York.
Ooh.
And you know it's a big list of guests when I start with the professional wrestlers. Tito Santana is going to be there.
Oh.
Howard Finkel is going to be there.
I know of him.
Right. The Amazing Kreskin is going to be there.
Oh, I wonder if he knows if I'm coming or not.
I bet he doesn't. Dustin Diamond is going to be there.
Wait a minute, the referee from Breaking Bad?
No, we didn't touch on that, or we won't touch on that in this week's After Dark, but that was part of the reason why I wanted to put him in there.
Mm-hmm.
But Todd, it's getting out of hand now.
Right.
Last year, you had the opportunity to get your Mark photo with both Ralph Macchio and William Zabka.
Mm-hmm.
Danielson and Johnny, respectively, from The Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. Then in recent months, they've added Martin Cove, the evil Kreese, the leader of the Cobra Kai Dojo.
Right.
This weekend at Garden State Megafest, not only are those three going to be there, but Ron Thomas and Rob Garrison, who play Bobby and Tommy, the next two and three guys down from the Cobra Kai, are going to be there as well.
Oh.
Tommy, you would know, is the guy who says, put him in a body bag. Yeah.
Well, I would get that on a shirt.
Right.
When I got my picture taken.
You know, when we get our convention tables where we're the guys who says, ooh, Navy SEALs and clerks.
Right, yes.
He's a couple steps above us.
That's right. But he's legit.
But again, hey, that's five people in a Mark photo. There was someone who tweeted at us who said that they were going to go to whatever convention that was that Bobby Heenan was going to be at last weekend.
Right. We didn't get any word on that, did we?
No, there was no follow-up, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes Twitter doesn't like to give me notifications.
I know.
I miss out on all of Todd's fanciful witticisms and taunting of other people.
What? When have I ever taunted anyone? Mm-hmm.
So while I'm looking up that information, let me talk about the soon-to-be-named network. Soon-to-be-named-network.com. It's soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com as well, where you can find podcasts such as this one that you're listening to right here, Long Box Heroes After Dark, other shows such as Fresher and Parlance Show, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, who are just starting off their new, I guess, run, if you will, because they're at over 100 episodes now. The Aim Down Sights podcast, and lo and behold, the Prodigal Sons podcast returned this past week, and there was much grousing to be had.
Uh-oh.
So you want to make me mad, take 9 weeks off from your show, and then release the episode where you skip a numbering of an episode.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. My heart can't take these things sometimes, Todd.
Know the feeling.
Right. And, there was that. I'm just looking. I could have swore we saw someone tweeted us about that. I'm just looking through those other tweets. I apologize if I'm just a touch distracted. Oh, and I have to give a belated shout out there. And we did not have a follow up because a lot of times we just stick to the comic book conventions. And, you know, we talked a little bit about other types of conventions that come out. There was a sci-fi convention in Erie, Pennsylvania this past weekend that all of the Puzzle Warriors went to.
The guys who do the Marvel Puzzle Quest thing?
Yes. Because they talked about it on their show, and by talked about it, they talked in vague terms of a convention, and they never said the name of the convention. Wow. So I had to use my detective works to figure out what they were talking about.
Con nouns, pal.
Right. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I couldn't find the person who said they went to that con last week that Bobby Heenan was at, but we have some other belated shout-outs to get into here. There is a ton of digital sales and freebies going on. IDW is having a sale on their Ghostbusters stuff. Marvel is having a sale on Venom stuff. Titan is having a sale on their gaming-related books, Assassin's Creed and things of that nature. And DC is having a sale on all things Scott Snyder. Now, I know you're going to knee-jerk reaction and say, like, oh, hey, I'm going to try all this new fancy Batman stuff that exists. And I'm going to say, slow your roll. Hold on. There's a lot of stuff that's like weird collections of stuff. But I'm going to implore you, the listener of this show, to check out his run on Swamp Thing that's part of the sale, as well as the 11 issues of his run on Detective Comics, The Black Mirror.
Yep.
That is one of those books that, I'm not going to say that it's on sale all the time, but it's on sale quite a bit. And it's one of those things, every time that it's on sale, I'm like, oh, I have to buy that again. And then I find out that I already have it in my collection. All the time I do that.
Those are two good runs of a comic.
That's right. And that Venom run, I was looking at it, and there's some interesting stuff in there when Cullen Bunn was writing the book, when it was Agent Venom.
Right.
Flash Thompson was in the Venom symbiote. The Tsunami run on Venom is included in this that we had talked about a couple weeks ago here on this show. And then the Spider Island crossover by Dan Slott is included in there.
Right.
Sadly, as I'm looking this over, no Venom miniseries stuff with art by our good friend Tom Derenick.
No sign of the boss.
No sign of the boss. I was looking through, like, they have Knights of Vengeance is included in this. Some other one called Dark Origin, another one called Along Came a Spider, another one called Separation Anxiety, another one called Carnage Unleashed, the original one called Lethal Protector, but nothing by our good friend Tom, sadly. Mm. But
hopefully soon.
Yeah, my hot picks would be Spider Island, Swamp Thing, and the Black Mirror stuff from Scott Snyder in descending order, 3, 2, 1. If you're going to spend some money this week.
Contact.
And hey, if you don't want to spend money, but you still want digital comics, there's a ton of stuff for free as well. Marvel updated their list of stuff. The first issue of the Nathan Edmondson Black Widow is up. And that seems to go up as a sale, like as a freebie, like almost every 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that one gets picked all the time, but there you go. And if you missed it this time, it'll come back up in about 2 months or so. Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force, which is a really good run. The first issue of Runaways by Brian K. Vaughan, highly recommended. And the first issue of Star Wars, the Dark Horse version that was written by Brian Wood that Marvel acquired when Disney acquired Star Wars.
Right.
Kind of gets a little overshadowed now, because of how good the current Star Wars books are. But they had a nice little run there over at Dark Horse. That was kind of like the tail end of it. Maybe they saw the writing was on the wall.
Yep, it was really good. And then you could see it kind of sputter out because they're like, oh, this is going bye-bye.
And Marvel has also put up their... Marvel and DC have put up their free comic book day offerings as well. So the Marvel Secret Empire tie-in and the all-new Guardians of the Galaxy, which was both new material, as well as DC's Superhero Girls and Wonder Woman, which were reprints, but it's the books that you can get on the stands. If you don't care that it says Free Comic Book Day on them, they're free. So go check those out. And I'll try to hammer this as much as I can. We talked about it last week, of course, but I've been getting tweeted by so many people that have been checking out those books that are still for free. If you have Amazon Prime, on the Kindle side of things, digitally, the first two trades of, like, Star Wars and Darth Vader and Miss Marvel and the Bendis Guardians of the Galaxy, the Joss Whedon Astonishing X-Men. I'm just trying to remember some of the more notable ones off the top of my head. The first two trades of Bendis' Alias are included in there. If you just kind of peruse around the Kindle store for Marvel stuff, you'll come across all the stuff that's still up there for free. And a lot of it is really good stuff, and you can't beat free comics. Yeah. The only thing that's better than free comics is free great comics.
And the only thing better than free great comics is someone paying you to read comics.
Right.
Which I'm open for that job.
So, I think that covers all that.
Yep.
Let's get into what we read from this past week. I'm going to let you start things off because I've talked for a very long time. And I'm
that is fine. I'm going to start with Doctor Strange number 20, written by Jason Aaron and art by Chris Bacalo. As I said before, it's the end of the Jason Aaron, Chris Bacalo run on Doctor Strange. And basically, since most magic was destroyed by the Empirical, I want to make sure I'm saying that right. But so this starts off with a auction for rare items because there's not much left. To make a long story short, Doctor Strange, you know, wants that stuff so it can't get into the hands of other people. Through a series of events, gets attacked and gets shunted off to a surprise appearance for me of Weird World, which is nice to see again in a Jason Aaron book. And along for the ride is Zelma Stanton. I want to make sure I have that right. Yeah, Zelma Stanton, his librarian slash apprentice right now. And Doctor Strange ends up getting knocked out, and Zelma has to protect him while they're trying to, you know, live on Weird World for a little bit. But as this goes on, we find out, you know, that Zelma is probably going to be the new, like, Wong in his world as Wong goes off to wander around to start his life. It's an interesting end to the book. I have a feeling down the line I could see Zelma becoming the Sorcerer Supreme for a while. It seems like I could see them setting that up, like her learning. But I like it because, you know, it's a change in the book. I like it. I want to see where Wong's going to go off and do. But I think it's a good ending for the run that they laid down over 20 issues that I absolutely loved.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm sad to see this end.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely, you know, obviously it felt from the introduction of Zelma to the book, that she was going to be groomed to be a Sorceress Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
Since we've learned that there are many Sorceress Supremes going on, and this one kind of made it feel more like that she was going to be the Sorceress Supreme, as opposed to, or as opposed to a Sorceress Supreme.
Yeah, the capital the, instead of the small the.
I loved the art in this. I think there was art. It wasn't all done by Bacalo. I think there was the middle parts done by Kevin Nolan.
Right.
Which was really nice. It bled in very nicely, I felt. I still like the ongoing thread of him trying to get what little magic artifacts still exist because magic is still gone and he needs these things, and they really kind of put over the strain that using magic has on you, even if you are a skilled magic user.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the departure of Wong from all this. Now, I did not read the issue 21 that came out a week before this with the new creative team, but I wonder how much, if any, of these dangling plot threads are going to continue.
Right, or if something down the line, Jason Aaron, who, you know, like Weird World just even popped up for a bit in this, has plans for Wong down the line. You know what I mean? So
right.
I could see some that being more of the way than him appearing in the new writers, Doctor Strange, because That seems like Jason Aaron's MO, like things carry over to other books.
Right. Oh, that'd be interesting to see.
Wong and Thor, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. You know there's going to be some sort of payoff to that.
I do believe that. I do believe we will see Wong show up somewhere else.
What if he's the new Dark Thor?
He's the War Thor?
Right.
Mm.
Because War why not? Wong.
I would read War Wong.
It'd be very interesting. But yes, I liked the end of this book a lot. I felt as though, while I would have liked to have seen more, this definitely felt as a nice closure on the book. This was kind of like, and again, being that you and I are old men, this felt like a closure of old on a book.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say old, I mean like early to mid-2000s.
Yeah, where, all the way back then, huh?
Right, where a creator would leave a book, they would kind of tie up a bunch of their loose ends, mix up some of the puzzle pieces, and just kind of like give a new status quo to the person coming in. Where it's not like they start the book, mix up the puzzle pieces, and then by the end of their run, nothing has changed.
Right. It's all back to, they leave it as they found it.
Right. Right. And I'm a big fan of taking a character like a Doctor Strange and kind of mixing up his status quo a bit.
And if this was the last issue of Doctor Strange for a while, it still works.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, like, you know, it just leaves it as, oh, like Doctor Strange doing his thing. And now, you know, Zelma is involved. And it's like, okay, like, just the implication of future adventures is all you need. You know what I mean?
Right.
But there's still going to be a book. So it works on multiple levels.
So I really liked it. I'm sad to see it go, but I'm glad that Jason Aaron is still doing stuff at Marvel for me to read. And there's rumor and innuendo that the next issue of Southern Bastards might be coming out next week. So
I don't know.
Like,
we'll
not
see.
Next week, but like next week.
Oh, double next week?
Yeah, like 2 weeks from now.
Right.
Rumor and innuendo. This will be the first. We'll let you know when I get that official word.
Okay.
So moving off of Doctor Strange onto one of the other big books from last week, which was Batman number 24, written by Tom King with art by David Finch. The thing that I... Now, the version I got was not the second print that gives the spoiler right on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I did my best to avoid the spoilers, the mm-hmm. cover and the colors used in the cover kind of tipped off what it could have been.
Right.
Anywho, does it say in the it says in the cover though, like the header says like every epilogue is a beginning or something?
Every epilogue is a prequel.
Every epilogue is a prequel, right? So this is the buffer between the previous story arc and the next story arc, which is the War of Riddles and Jokes. And at this point, we're a week removed from this, so the issue ends with Batman proposing to Catwoman to marry him. Right.
Spoilers.
Well, it's been a week. At this point, I feel safe and confident in talking about spoilers on this. And of course, there's other stuff going on with a lot of the other characters, a lot of inner monologue of kind of Bruce of what he's been going through and what Batman actually is to him, which was very interesting, of course, and the stuff with Gotham Girl of what she's going to do with her life now.
Mm-hmm.
So I like this, but I know there are going to be a lot of people who are probably going to pick this book up because of what happens in this.
Right.
And I don't know what I'm more fearful of. People are picking this book up because they think they'll be able to sell it on the secondary market.
That never happens, but go on.
Or the people who pick this up as their first Batman Tom King issue and are confused and have no idea what's going on.
Well, that is true. I get what you're saying.
Because he does a good job of trying to get everything in there, but it's a lot mm-hmm. to get in there.
It is. It's 23 issues of 24 with the Batman Zero uh-huh. rebirth thing. It's 24 issues of story that he tries to get in there. But here's the beauty thing. for the people who have read those 24 issues, this is an amazing single issue.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the thing. And the other thing that frightens me for someone who's picking up this book for the first time and like, oh, Batman's, proposing to Catwoman. I'm going to put my kid through college, and then sits down and reads it and nothing happens throughout the book. Nothing. Like the book.
It's a lot of people talking.
That's exactly. And that works for me because I am in for the long haul. And I even like said this on Twitter this week was I was like, some writers know how to write the long game. And Tom King is definitely writing the long game, which I'll get to in a minute. But the whole thing is it's Gotham Girl and Batman discussing what their lives are and why Batman's the way he is and, as tragic it is. And she's more hopeful. And I love the fact that after all this, she's not completely broken. Like I like the fact that there's a positive Bat character. I love it. I equate like a Superman Batman kind of character. And I love that. But it's like I said, there's a lot of nothing going on. But the brilliance is in the 24 issues that came before, as in the Diamond story that we got many issues ago and how that all works in and the engagement. And I'm like, this just all the stuff that he lays out is it's all there and it pays off after 24 issues. And at no point do I feel like I was bogged down in any of those issues.
Right.
So that's why I love this run of a book, of this book. It's fantastic.
And again, it's great, but I don't know. We talked before. The two issues where it was all about the romance between Batman and Catwoman were probably my least favorite issues of the run. And
right.
Now that they're getting married, or he proposed to her, they're kind of doubling down on it.
Right. Okay.
I don't like Bat romance.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb. Okay, you've read 24 issues, 25 now, of Tom King's Batman.
Yes.
Right? How well do you think this is going to end? Honestly.
It's going to end poorly, but not for a while.
And that's going to be fine. And I think it all, and I mean, the brilliance of it too is it coming out of the button where we have the Flashpoint, Thomas Wayne telling him, you're doing all this wrong, Bruce. These are repercussions because of what his father told him. To me, it all works on a giant scale. And he's going to find out that all this is all nice, my opinion anyway. These are all nice thoughts. But first and foremost, he's Batman. This isn't going to work. Chalk it up to more tragedy for Bruce. That's the way I look at it. So I'm all in on the Selina Bruce marriage. That's not going to work. That we're never going to get to.
You think she's going to say no? You think we're going to get the okay?
I don't know, but go ahead.
Imagine how many issues they would sell of the Batman-Catwoman wedding issue.
But it was all Clayface. He's married to Clayface.
Aww. I can't say the JR line here. This is the family-friendly show.
Right. But no, I don't know. Yes, they would sell a ton of the Bat-marriage thing, but it would be Bat-annulled by the end of it.
I could see them getting married, and I could see them being, and again, I don't know the length of Tom King's contract at DC, but I could see them being married for up to 7 issues before whatever the end of his run would be.
Mm-hmm.
Where in that 7th to last issue, she gets killed, and then that last 6-part run is him dealing with that and, whoever the new person coming in can just ignore all of that previous stuff.
I think it's going to be them getting married, but it's going to be one of the blatant Batman villains being the priest who marries them, but nobody notices a la Batman 66. Oh, and we find out that it's a sham marriage the whole time. So, you know, like the Joker would back then in Batman 66, the Joker show up as like an ice cream vendor and nobody'd notice. Be like, hey, let's get some of that ice cream. And they would just marry them. That's my take.
All right.
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, but I can't wait to see. You know what? I trust in Tom King.
I trust in Tom King as well. I just, you know.
You're a negative Nelly.
I'm a negative Nelly. I don't like my Batman to be happy and in love.
But he's not going to be happy and in love. It's not going to be well. But anyway.
Anyway. The last book that we have to talk about is a book that's in stores today as you're listening to this. Hopefully you all went to the midnight sale like Todd and I did to pick this up.
That's why Joe's so tired.
That's why I'm so sleepy. I got my second wind, though.
Mm-hmm.
So we're good. This would be DC Comics Dark Days, The Forge, number one. Written by Scott Snyder with art by James Tynion. And this is the beginning of whatever the next, I don't want to say crossover, and I don't want to say event, but the next story, the next plot thread.
I just want to say something really quick.
Go ahead.
James Tynion probably didn't draw this issue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said written by those two.
Right.
I meant to say written by James Tynion and Scott Snyder with art by a ton of people.
Right. That's why when you said art by James Tynion, I'm like, nope.
Again, I've been up in line waiting for the shop to open at midnight, Todd. Come on.
That's right. That's right. We were drinking coffees till 11:59.
Coffee, huh? Oh.
Right.
Anyway.
In a bag with a snake.
So, we knew that there was something going on with metal. We knew that there was something involving nth metal. Whenever there's nth metal, there's always hawk people involved.
Mm-hmm.
But this goes deeper and further than anything that we've known in this current iteration of Rebirth. Now, I'll say this. Batman's got a lot going on.
Oh, he does. He's got a lot of irons in the... He's got a lot of metals in the fire.
Oh, my goodness. So, the book starts off with, you know, a little bit of Hawkman stuff, but then there is a emergency at an offshore oil rig that's near a volcano, and Batman shows up in a crazy bat mech to save the guy who's working on it. Aquaman shows up and is like, hey, this illegal offshore oil rig is like somehow connected to Wayne Tech. Kayfabe, Bruce, what are you up to? Well, there's like a dude right there. And
he was unconscious.
Well, we don't know how unconscious. Neither one of those two are a doctor. So, Batman is looking for something, and he's not looking for a diamond for Selina, and he's not looking for the button. He's looking for something else, even further still.
Right.
So we get most of the Justice League in this, as mentioned. Aquaman's in it, Green Lantern is in it, Superman is in it, and as I mentioned, that's really the crux of the story. Batman's hiding something. Everyone wants to know what it is. There's a door that Batman has been afraid to open. He finally opens it, and now everything is getting tied into things as far back as Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That's right. While that's going on, Hal Jordan has been sent by the movie Guardians from the Ryan Reynolds movie, apparently.
Oh, boy.
Because, honestly, that thing that they were sitting in looks just like the chairs from the movie, which I was like, distance yourself. But as it goes on, he has to go to Wayne Manor because the Guardians say something's up, and he's going through a series of things, and someone is, you know, talking him through it, saying like the secrets are even bigger than you expect. So, and he's with is it Thomas Duke?
What's the
Duke Thomas?
Duke Thomas,
who doesn't have a code name yet. So I find the interaction between them fun because him trying to intimidate the fearless Hal Jordan is kind of funny. But yeah, so He's trying to get into the cave to find out what secret is there. Batman's up at, you know, trying to get through the door that he has. And like you said, and I have to admit, you know, I have not been the biggest Scott Snyder fan recently. This book really did bring the tension as both stories were going on, trying to figure out where they were leading. And then when they drop the two bombs that they do, they land very well, especially one of them, like you said, the one that tends towards crisis for an old timey fan like myself. So I have to admit, with everything that they did, it pushed me. I'm all in on to see where this goes. And as I was joking one time that, you know, the button and the doomsday clock would seem to overshadow this for me. This with some of the revelations that they did completely turned me around on this whole thing.
Right. And there's a lot to process in this, and it's going to be doled out to us over the course of the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because this ties into the six Dark Matter books that we got teased at C2E2. Specifically, the Immortal Men book were all over this issue. There's teases of the Outsiders. There's all sorts of stuff. And it's all going to come spinning out of this. Mm-hmm. You know, we had... This one was... what did we say? This is Dark... And it's not a ton of stuff. It's essentially three single issues. Dark Days, Dark Night, Dark Matter. And then that's going to lead into these different books. Mm-hmm. And your mileage on those books, I think, are going to depend on how those characters are introduced in those sort of three single issues.
Yep, you're going to have strong entrances.
Right. So, I remember when we talked about those DC books, the books that are going to be spinning out of this 2 months ago or whenever it was that these were first announced, I was like, nah, we'll see about this one, we'll see about that one. I wasn't too sure on the Immortal Men one, but now I'm in on the Immortal Men one, based on this.
Which, I loved the idea of the Immortal Man, and he was killed off all the way back in Crisis on Infinite Earth, so I find that intriguing.
Right, so this did exactly what it was supposed to do. It got you interested in new books that are coming out, granted from some tried and true creators, but at least it's going to be some new ideas and new concepts or redos on things. So I thought this was really good, even though there was a lot going on, a lot to digest. But as Todd mentioned, this is probably some of the best stuff that Scott Snyder has done on the superhero side of things in about a year, I'd say.
Longer for me, but that's my
longer opinion. For you, but yes. So, if you're heading to your store today, or you're listening to this online at your midnight sale, not like Todd and I went to Singapore to get our copy, check this one out. It's got like five different covers. You know, choose the one that fits you best.
Always go for the shiny one. That's my motto.
Right, just like this episode has the shiny cover.
That's right. Polished it up and everything.
Right, so, that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out so that you're not in for a sticker shock when you have dozens upon dozens of books, because we're back to a normal number of weeks for the next couple months.
Mm-hmm.
The two things that Todd and I attempt to do is, for the calendar year of 2017, is one, guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I am currently in the lead for the first time in a very long time. It's a margin of one, but I'll take it. And we're also listing all of the books that we are getting from all of the different publishers. The slight lead that I had last week is now becoming a commanding lead over Todd. I get a lot of books, Todd.
You do.
Right, and even if we take out the two books that are in there for my wife and the two that are in there for the son, I still got a pretty hefty lead.
Right, but then you got to add in all the books that I forgot, so you
right.
never know.
Right, and that's when I got your list, I'm like, oh boy, how many did Todd forget this week?
I forgot none okay?
I think you forgot that you forgot books.
That's what I tend to do.
So, you started the show, so you get to guess first. Now, I will say this. If we did not already read it, the book that I would have been most looking forward to coming out would have been Dark Days, The Forge.
Right. Is it Defenders number one?
It is Defenders number one. The tying together before the new Netflix series comes out of those characters that are going to be in that show. Your Jessica Jones, your Luke Cage, your Daredevil, your Iron Fist.
Right.
And looking at your list, I think that's the one you're most looking forward to coming out as well.
Nope, we are tied as of right
now. Oh, look at this.
I am looking forward to, I want to see, after Lemire's run, I want to see Old Man Logan number 25 with Deodato art. I want to see how that is. I'm very curious to see what my take will be on that, whether I want to keep going, give it a few more issues, or, you know, drop it.
My second guess.
Right.
Of course. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out previous editions of the Pull Post, previous episodes of this show, previous episodes of After Dark, previous Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything that we've ever done on the internet is there. Also, if you click on the little button there that says Store, you could purchase shirts or stickers of our fancy logo that we had with us at Break the Barrier this past weekend. But if you do not want a shirt, you do not want a sticker, you can always purchase something through our Amazon click-through. Now, again, I'm not going to go crazy with all the stuff that a lot of other shows do, but their Amazon click-through, we just are grateful for any purchase, and we had a ton of purchases this past week.
That's what I like to hear.
We had people purchasing the Wonder Woman Volume 1 by John Byrne. Someone also purchased really fancy and expensive Wonder Woman boots replica from the movie.
My goodness.
Someone purchased Logan, the Logan film that came out this past spring on Blu-ray. Someone also purchased Dark of the Moon and Age of Extinction on Blu-ray, the Transformers film. And I think based on our conversation from last week's After Dark, Todd, someone, right, and I'm going to guess this is one person, went Funko Pop crazy.
Oh my goodness.
They purchased Yoda, a Stormtrooper, Princess Leia, Darth Vader, Han Solo, Darth Maul, Unmasked Darth Vader, and Muftak.
Oh my goodness, not Muftak.
And is it sad that I knew who Muftak was without having to look at the link?
Yes, it was.
All right. There's some people who know, and there's some people that need it explained to them.
That's right.
Muftak is from the Cantina. He's like the white furry creature that looks like he has four eyes.
Ah, he's kind of like, yes, I know what you mean.
See, now you know. Those are the things I learned from playing the old Star Wars CGC puzzle game.
I thought you were going to say Puzzle Quest game.
No, I tried the Marvel, or the Star Wars Puzzle Quest. It's not very good.
Oh.
The bubbles don't pop the way I like them.
Well, you're all about popping.
I am. Did we have any Todd's Art Attacks? Oh, wait, before we get into Todd's Art Attack, I do have to give a belated shout-out. I know we had mentioned on the show because someone had purchased, had purchased a Sun Joe pressure washer.
Yes.
And it was longtime Power Ultra Mass mega listener of the show, Rich Grimmel, who even went as far to take a picture of me and put it on the Sun Joe pressure washer. I hope you pressure washed my face off that before you actually used it.
Yes.
So if you purchase something and you let us know, we'll give you a shout out. That's the kind of show we are.
Yes, we did get two Todd's Art Attacks.
We did?
That's right. We got from Andy Hedder, kayfabe_Lincoln. He went to Wizard World Philly. And he got a Jean Grey sketch cover and a Jane Foster Thor sketch cover from Brendan and Brian Fram. I'm not sure who they are, but he took two lovely pictures, and they're really nice.
The colors on that Jane Foster Thor are amazing.
Yep.
Amazing.
That's a nice soft blue to go with the bright red and yellows.
Absolutely.
Lots of primaries going on there.
Yes.
You know? That's what works. So yeah, I really like these. These are really nice covers. Jealous. Now I need to buy some artwork.
This is why you're not allowed to go to conventions, because you'll spend your money frivolously.
Somebody made maybe try to get a line of credit against their house this week to maybe get to do renovations and or buy artwork occasionally. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my goodness.
But from reputable artists who will deliver.
No comment. Let's not shake that hornet's nest, huh?
That's right.
All right, so last bit of business, of course, before we wrap up, that would be Todd and Joe have issues. This week, we talked about the single issue Alias number 10, written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Michael Gatos.
Mm-hmm.
The crux of this story is J. Jonah Jameson hires Jessica Jones to find out who Spider-Man is.
Right.
Jonah has a lot of dirt on her, is even able to find out superhero identities that were not as publicly known as Jewel. I think Nitrous was the one specifically. I don't think Nitrous ever comes up again.
I was just going to say that blew my mind rereading it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, did that ever happen again? Or does Brian Michael Bendis have a story in the future we're going to read?
Well, let me ask Bing again.
But like you said, this is a story of J. Jonah Jameson trying to get Jessica to investigate some stuff for him. And it's more of a J. Jonah Jameson tour de force than it is a Jessica Jones story.
You know, and so the long and the short of what happens at this is Jonah is his usual pleasant self.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of rubs Jessica the wrong way. And she really digs down deep in the investigation of who Spider-Man is.
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of work trying to figure out who it is. Spending a lot of time at soup kitchens, orphanages, and so forth. Spending a lot of Jonah's money to essentially not find out who Spider-Man is, to help the betterment of underprivileged people.
Right, but in that, giving herself a bulletproof vest against J. Jonah Jameson.
Right.
Which, you know, Jessica isn't altruistic, and she's never been that way. So I almost lean more towards that when J. Jonah is like, I'm going to bury her, and Ben Ulrich and Robbie Robertson are like, you're going to go after the woman, and you're going to say, she stole my money, and she spent it on orphans and homeless people and people in an AIDS clinic. Do you hear yourself? Like, what's going to happen when you do that? And I think it was, I honestly think for the character that Jessica is, she was more of to get him off the back of her. Like, I never have to worry about this again, than it was helping people. And the thing that I find interesting is, one, that it looked like, you know, I like Robbie playing it off like, oh, like, it was a scam the whole time? I never saw it. And I'm an experienced journalist who, you know, solves clues for a living. And I'm like, all right, that's funny. They all knew, and they just let it go down. And the other thing that I like is, really, J. Jonas, a newsman, and he's smarter than he lets, like, not lets on, but he has instincts. And the whole thing about Daredevil, He's right on. He's like, I don't care what anybody says. Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and he's right, which takes me back to that time in comics once again. But so it equates me to that J. Jonah is almost like, and I always bring it around to this character, is that he's like Spider-Man's Doctor Doom. He could figure it all out if he wasn't blinded by sheer hatred. That's his Achilles heel. It's like, yes, he's that's the one thing they've made him. He's been a jerk, cheap, anti-hero, but he's never been inept at his job. He's never been inept at his job. And like I said, they show him that he's very competent in other areas. But when it comes to Spider-Man, he goes nuts, and it fogs his judgment a la Dr. Doom against Reed Richards. And that's the way I see it, and especially in this story. He's right about everything else, but when it comes to Peter and Spider-Man, he cannot figure it out.
To even go, yo, one a little bit more on the side as well, similar mindset, is Lex Luthor and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to that John Byrne issue where the whole thing is Lex hires the team of people to figure out who Superman is, and the entire issue, or the majority of the issue, is them laying out all the information, giving Lex all the facts, showing him exactly who it is, and then they do the reveal, and then Lex just fires them all and says, you're obviously all stupid, it can't be Clark Kent, because why would someone who has those immeasurable powers just be a lowly reporter for a newspaper?
It's unfathomable to him.
Right.
That someone with that much power would act that lowly.
Right. And it's always genius. Good when these characters like this have that blind spot.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I got. And I like all the old nods of certain things where he's talking about, like, here's Peter, you know, taking pictures of, you know, stuff in Soho, because they had the map. And, mm-hmm. like, didn't he have an apartment in Soho at one point?
Yeah.
And, like Brian Michael Bendis knows his history. And I'm not a Spider-Man guy, but I know, like, some things. And it's like, oh, that's cool. That's a nod over here, and that's a nod over there. And it's all, like, he had a nice plan. And it's a nice one-off story, and it makes, you know, Joan – it's one of those issues, like, if somebody wanted, it came to me and said, Todd, I need to get a feel for J. Jonah Jameson as fast as I can. You go, this alias issue. You slide this across the table to them.
And, and Jessica would actually end up working for the Daily Bugle later when this book became not a Max book, but a Marvel Universe book called The Pulse. Mm-hmm. And that was the only other time Nitrous was mentioned. It was a one panel in the second to last issue of The Pulse.
And I do think I would not be surprised if in Jessica Jones now,
mm-hmm.
we got a Nitrous story.
That would be pretty cool.
And I would just, that would blow my mind. I'd be like, ah, thanks to Todd and Joe have issues. I know what this is.
We're a learning podcast. We learn you about stuff.
That's right. It's a learning annex podcast.
We're better than a thousand TED Talks.
Okay.
Do you know what TED Talk is?
That's the podcast about the McFarlane movie with the little bear, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, so let's get into what we're going to talk about and read for next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we're throwing the format out the window. We're going with something a little bit different. We got a specific suggestion from a listener, so we're going to try that. It's something that neither Todd and I have read. But any time that discussion over the last year or so has come up over the current Superman run, Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko with a zero, .org on Twitter, Jason Kirk's co-host on Paladins of Voltron, lets us know that the Superman run currently is really good, specifically citing issue 7 as a great standalone story. So that is what we'll be reading for next week's Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And that's it.
I think that is it. To close out the big Tree Fitty-ish episode.
That's right. If I was better at doing audio editing and pulling clips and things of that nature, I'd pull that clip from South Park of Chef's dad saying Tree Fitty.
Tree Fitty, the Loch Ness Monster.
Just pretend that Todd is that guy.
That's right, about Tree Fitty.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much for continuing on the journey that is this show through 350 episodes. Here's to 350 more, Todd.
That's right. I think I can make most of those.
All right. So for Todd, this is Joe closing out the episode of Longbox Heroes, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.